ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. సో దిస్ మార్నింగ్ వి ఆర్ రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ క్యాంటో 10 చాప్టర్ 80 టెక్స్ట్ 30, 31, 32, 33. కేచిత్ కూర్వంతి కర్మాణి కామైరహత చేతసా త్యజంత ప్రకృతిర్ దైవీర్ యతాహం లోక సంగ్రహం. కేచిత్ కూర్వంతి కర్మాణి కామైరహత చేతసా త్యజంత ప్రకృతిర్ దైవీర్ యతాహం లోక సంగ్రహం. కేచిత్ కూర్వంతి కర్మాణి కామైరహత చేతసా త్యజంత ప్రకృతిర్ దైవీర్ యతాహం లోక సంగ్రహం. మాతాజీస్, వాట్ టు వర్డ్ ట్రాన్స్లేషన్? కేచిత్, సమ్ పీపుల్. Kurvanti, execute. Karmani, worldly duties. Kamaihi, by desires. Ahata, undisturbed. Chetasa, whose minds. Tyajantaha, giving up. Prakritihi, propensities. Daivihi, created by the Supreme Lord's material energy. Yatha, as. Aham, I. Loka Sangraham, to instruct the people in general. Translation: having renounced all material propensities which spring from the Lord's illusory energy, some people execute worldly duties with their minds undisturbed by mundane desires. They act as I do to instruct the general populace. Since there is no purport in this verse, we'll move forward. Kachit guru kulevasam brahmam smarasi nauyatah dvijo vignyaya vigneyam tamasa paramasnute. My dear Brahmana, do you remember how we lived together in our spiritual master's school? When a twice born student has learned from his guru all that is to be learned, he can enjoy spiritual life which lies beyond all ignorance. Text 32. Savai satkarmanam sakshad dvijate riha sambhava adyonga yatrashraminam yataham jnana do guru. My dear friend, he who gives a person his physical birth is his first spiritual master, and he who initiates him into twice born Brahman and engages him in religious duties is indeed more directly his spiritual master. But the person who bestows transcendental knowledge upon the members of all spiritual orders of society is one's ultimate spiritual master. Indeed, he is as good as my own self. Text 33. Nanva artha kovida brahman varnashrama vatamiha ye maya guru na vacha taranti yagnyo bhavarnavam. Certainly, O Brahmana, of all the followers of the Varnashram system, those who take advantage of the words I speak in my form as the spiritual master and thus easily cross over the ocean of material existence best understand their own true welfare. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki. Purport: one's father is a natural object of reverence, as is a religious leader who initiates one into sacred ceremonies and instructs one in general wisdom. But ultimately, the bona fide spiritual master, learner in transcendental science, and thus able to take one across the ocean of birth and death to the spiritual world, such a guru is most deserving of worship and respect, for he is the direct representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated here. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Dadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Sarasvate Deve Kauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhaktashaktikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Stute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So we welcome everyone to the daily Bhagavatam class. Today is a very auspicious day. Many things lined up today. Shri Balaram Vyas Yatra, Krishna Vasantaras, and Vamshi Vadanananda Thakur's appearance day, who is the personal flute of Krishna incarnated in Chaitanya Leela. And also, today is the most blessed day of Hanuman Jayanti. Jai Shri Hanuman Ji Ki! Jai. So just as Hanuman Ji took the leap of faith for the service of rendering service to Lord Shri Ram in search of Mother Sita, with the blessings of Guru and association of friends, he was able to achieve and accomplish the task. Similarly, my small leap of faith is sitting here and providing some service to all of you here today. So seeking blessings and blessings and prayers from all of you today, without which I cannot do anything and fulfill this service. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So the verses for discussion today we see are based on the pastimes involving Sudama and Krishna. So for the last week or some days or few, we seeing these verses being discussed very elaborately, very nicely by so many devotees. Krishna and Sudama pastime is one of the most favorite pastimes throughout the world. I've heard it from childhood from my grandmother, and so many of you must have. But the difference is, when we hear these pastimes in childhood, they are just from the mouth of our parents, grandmother, grandfather. Of course, they have spiritual realizations. But when that is just as a small child, we might not contemplate too much or get deep into the meaning of what actually the pastime signifies. But when we read Srimad Bhagavatam, when we go through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, when these pastimes, when we scan through this text, translation, purports given by His Divine Grace, we actually deeply understand the meaning of what they actually signify. So I'll not take too much time in kind of recapping everything, because it's been done very thoroughly by all the speakers. But in a sense, Sudama is an impoverished Brahmana who's struggling for resources, but his wealth is dedication, complete fixed concentration, his mind is applied on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his wife is perturbed. Why? Because she cannot serve her husband, she cannot see her husband suffering. So his wife very intelligently puts forward different words through which he is convinced to meet the Lord and make his journey to Dwarka. And then we see how Sudama makes the journey to Dwarka, enters Queen Rukmini's palace, and Krishna starts speaking to Sudama. So yesterday we saw a beautiful verse where Krishna starts interacting with Sudama, and before that he welcomes him, worships him, offers him a betel nut, cow and charity. So lot of guest reception and friendship we saw over the past few verses. So continuing in the same trend, we see a thread of friendship being enveloped throughout this storyline. So there is a verse in Niti which goes like, Janati cha upaneta cha yastu vidyam prayachati annadata bhayatrata pashyaite pitaram smritam. So what does this verse signify? This verse signifies that Janati cha, one who gives birth, upaneta cha, one who gives the Brahman thread or dvija bond status. Then we have one who gives vidya, one who provides knowledge. After this we have annadata. Annadata means food, one who provides food. Bhayatrata, what is bhayatrata? One who provides liberation. So these five people, one should provide the same respect as one provides one's father. Pashyate pitaram smritam. This comes in one of the Niti Shastras. So what is the beautiful correlation in, the Bhagavatam has a powerful relation in the verses we are discussing today with this particular verse. We see in one of the verses, I think text 32 or text 31, where Krishna, he speaks with Sudama and he is kind of speaking to Sudama, and this is the exact verse. He says, my dear friend, he who gives a person his physical birth is his first spiritual master. And he who initiates him as twice born and engages him in religious duties is indeed more directly his spiritual master. But the person who bestows transcendental knowledge upon the members of all spiritual orders of society is one's spiritual master. So what is the common thread in these two verses? We see Bhagavatam is not just a book based on Krishna's pastimes. Bhagavatam is more than just a storybook narrating Krishna's pastimes right from his childhood, where he defeated various demons, or stories about various characters from scriptures. It has more to it. Here we see from comparing this Niti verse to this Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam gives us understanding of Vedic culture. Bhagavatam gives us understanding of Sanatan Dharma. What is respect? We should provide the same respect as we provide our father. to the above five mentioned that we saw in the verse. So similarly, even Krishna is speaking to Sudama, instructing him or sharing with him the knowledge where the highest respect or highest regard is given to one who actually liberates us or who actually helps us cross these oceans of birth and death. So this is a powerful connection. Bhagavatam is not only for stories or driving pastimes, but day-to-day basis, how we lead a practical life. So, why do we need a friend? Coming to the friendship aspect, I mean, why do we need a friend in today's world? If you just analyze for 5 seconds, the first thing you recall is what happens when we have a very happy situation in our life. Something, a student passes with flying colors in his exam, a match is arranged for a boy and a girl, they find a suitable match, or parents are happy, the child is performing very well. So what's their reaction? What is their feeling that one undergoes at such point of time? You immediately search for one person, a spiritual master embraces you. What is your feeling? You want to express that happiness that you shared with a person. So, similarly, when we experience situations like miseries, joy, sadness, what's the situation we feel? We're seeking for a shoulder to give us solace. So what is this? We are seeking a person in whom we can repose our faith or trust. So friendship is important at the mundane level. Friendship is important in the spiritual level. Someone sent me this line comparing friendship to a mathematical equation. It said that a friend is one who helps you or who divides your sorrows. A friend is one who multiplies your happiness. A friend is one who, increases or adds to the positives in your life. A friend is one who subtracts the negative from your life. And friendship is also compared to something like the relation between the hand and the eye. What happens when the hand gets hurt? The eyes start crying. And what happens when the eyes start crying? Those very hands which are hurt, they wipe those very hands. So this is all based on, you can say, mundane relationships, mundane friendship. But here in Bhagavatam, when we see how Sudama and Krishna are interacting in friendship and are behaving, we find that what do they do when they meet together? When two free friends meet together after a long time, what's the general feeling? You just, talk about anything and everything under the sun. How are you? I remember those past. We recall past fond memories. Similarly, first, after Krishna welcomed him, he recalled the past fond memories that he had. Generally, if you observe, something unpalatable doesn't come to the mind at such circumstances. Only favorable memories are recalled by the mind instinctively. So similarly, here Krishna and Sudama sit down and are recalling those fond memories, reminiscing those pastimes that they experienced in the Gurukula under the tutelage of Sandipani Muni. So here we see that this kind of friendship, further they share the knowledge of the Absolute Truth. Their friendship is based in service to Guru. And what is churned in this friendship when it is based on service to Guru? It is the realizations of the Absolute Truth. So today's talk, we'll broadly base it on these two aspects. One is the necessity for friendship in a Gurukul experienced under the tutelage. A Gurukul doesn't mean a Gurukul setup. It can be a community, it can be an organization, a society, a congregation of devotees. You don't need to restrict ourselves to this term Gurukul. It has a brighter and wider aspect. So, necessity of friendship in a Gurukul under the tutelage of a bona fide spiritual master. And then what happens? Service in cooperation, seeking the absolute truth. So, when Krishna is the center of all activities, that is the basis of real friendship. So, this is beautifully illustrated. So, what does a sadhaka need to have in order to acquire these qualities of friendship, in order to practice these principles? So we go back to the first canto where Narad Muni is conversing with Vyasadeva. We see how Vyasadeva is despondent after writing innumerable scriptures, the Mahabharata, the Itihasas, the Puranas, the Vedanta Sutras, the Upanishads and so on and so forth. So Narad Muni at that point, he solaces Vyasadeva and he points out where he erred, and then he advises him. And then in the course of discussion, Narad Muni, he brings out this beautiful verse. He says, Temai ape thakhila chapaler bake dante dhritakridanake anuvartini chakru kripam yadyapi tulya darshana shushru shamane munayo alpabhashini. So from this verse, Narad Muni says, I received mercy of the sages who studied the Vedanta. Why? Because I practiced four principles when I was small as a child. The first one, Narad Muni says, as a child, I was dante. I was self-controlled. The second quality, Narad Muni says, adhrita kridanake. That means, I was non-attachment to sporting proclivities. This is the second thing that Narad Muni states here in this verse. The third thing which Narad Muni points out is anumartini or obedience. And the fourth thing which is highlighted from this verse, that we as sadhakas should pick up for practicing in order to achieve this goal of friendship. So that is alpabhashini, speaking as much as required. So now we'll go through these four things in a little bit detail. So what is dante? Dante means self-control. So we see self-control is one of the most important qualities for a practicing sadhaka. What happens when we don't have self-control, or we cannot kind of restrain our senses for certain activities? Sometimes we feel, faith is a basic activity which is required for a student who is in search of a guru. Bhagavad Gita says that to become more strong in spiritual activities, one needs to become more stronger. And for that strength, one needs dante, one needs to practice self-control. It's like, if you don't have self-control, the process may not make sense, or it might not result into the ultimate means. For example, you go to an Ayurvedic doctor and he prescribes you certain medicines. So will the process work if you just go on keeping the medicines diligently, religiously, without practicing the diet he has advised, or without modifying your lifestyle? No. You might neglect these two, the ultimate ends do not meet. So similarly, self-control is very important. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he says, Tasmatvam indriyanyado niyamya bharatar sabha papmanam hi prajahi yenam jnana vijnana nashanam. So Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita has nicely pointed out that it is in the very childhood, or in the beginning, Arjuna, you curb this sinful propensity of lust and curb it by controlling your senses. So from this we can learn, Bhagavad Gita was spoken for Arjun, but actually Arjun didn't require it. He was just a via medium for us in this age of Kali to derive principles, values and basis for our daily living. So we have to learn from this verse how it is very important to cultivate these values of self-control right at the onset in the childhood, from our very beginning, so that our end becomes nice. You sweat in peace, you bleed in war. You don't bleed in war. So there was the California of University, it conducted a very basic test. You might all have seen the video of the marshmallow, test. So in this test, what happens is a favorite sweet of children in the age group of 5 to 10 year olds, they are called in a room, separated, kept, and a plate with this sweet kept in front of them. And now what is, they are asked, they said, if you can control the urge and temptation to resist from having a bite at this sweet for a period of 5 to 10 minutes, then what we will do, we will give you another sweet after 10 minutes. So then this test was done on quite a few children. And then it was observed, some gave in to this temptation, some resisted. And then after a period of years, they researched about it. They followed these students in their life, what was happening, what were they doing. And then it was observed that when these students reached an age of 15 and graduated and lived their life, this principle of self-control, those who practiced the principle of self-control, where they were able to restrain their senses, the child was able to restrain its senses from enjoying that sense object, that child at the age of 15 and who moved further was successful in life. Similarly, those children who couldn't control their urge at that time, they kind of had a lukewarm or moderate career. From a material point of view, complete mundane kind of an experiment which was done. So in that sense, what Arjuna is being told by Krishna is also being aptly demonstrated by this experiment done by the University of California. So what does it mean for us as devotees? I mean, Gurukul system 5 to 25, we come to Krishna consciousness when we are past 25, 30. So what does it signify? But Krishna, he gives hope. Prabhupada gives hope in the purport in this particular verse. Prabhupada says, if one is educated in Krishna consciousness from the very beginning, that natural love of God cannot deteriorate into lust. When the love of God deteriorates into lust, it is very difficult to return to the normal condition. Nonetheless, Krishna consciousness is so powerful that even a late beginner can become a lover of God by following the regulative principles of devotional service. So Prabhupada has made it very simple for us. Prabhupada, I mean, he's a genius in one sense. Not only he has built so many temples, he had the vision, envisioning of the creation, the creativity and concept and empowerment of, I mean, creating this society with buildings, temples, but also he understood what it took for the devotees who live within this temple, within the building, for them what it will take in future. So he inculcated a systematic, theme of morning program from 5 to 9. So if we analyze, what Prabhupada did was he facilitated us to practice Dante in one sense. If you just get up early in the morning, it takes a lot of effort. I hope everyone's agreeing on that. Then you have to chant your rounds attentively, come every day, day in, day out for Guru Puja, listen for Bhagavatam class, devotees at home too. Rise up early in the morning, worship your home deities, go to office, keep Krishna in the center. So practicing these principles daily, Prabhupada has inculcated a systematic morning program for us. So just by doing these small things daily, systematically on a daily basis, it simplifies the process for us. We don't need to have self-control as a too high object for us. In the Ramayana, as today is Hanuman Jayanti, we see that when Hanuman, he meets Ram. So there is a background to this. Because today is Hanuman Jayanti, I'll just kind of give a background to this story. So, Hanuman was standing with Sugriva in Kishkinda. And Lord Ram and Lakshman are entering, they are in the precincts on the borderline of Kishkinda Kshetra. Sugriv, from a far distance, he sees two men armed, mighty men armed with bows and arrows, kind of entering his kingdom. And he raises an alarm there. Sugriv is completely terrified, fearful. He says, oh, these two people are coming. Vali has sent them deliberately. I know this is Vali who's coming in disguise to kill me. So what happens when a leader, he loses composure, he goes berserk. The subjects in his kingdom also follow suit. So when a leader doesn't act responsibly, the subjects basically kind of, they lose direction. So all the monkeys who were present in Kishkinda Kshetra, they saw the reaction of their leader and they started running helter-skelter, jumping on one tree, theater-theater, and uprooting trees and creating a complete pandemonium commotion in Kishkinda Kshetra. Hanumanji, the ministers of Sugriv came and fell down at his feet saying, Master, what is happening? Hanumanji all this while was standing calm and composed beside Sugriv. Now, this is the beauty of Hanumanji. So Hanumanji, he is a minister of Sugriv in one sense, but then he is also a guru. So he advises Sugriv. First of all, the way he acted and how he conversed with Sugriv. So Hanumanji says, My dear Master of Sugriv, please do not be fearful. This is not Vali, or this is not men sent by Vali. First of all, please understand, there is no connection of Vali to this. kindly remember that Vali had been cursed that he personally cannot enter the Rishimukha mountains because he had got a curse. If he enters, he'll immediately die. So hearing this, Sugriv immediately became pacified and then he became open to advice. So now Hanumanji, he advises Sugriv on three aspects: knowledge, skills and values. Basically based on these three aspects, since basically I was taking this TTC course for the last few days, so this thing came up. So I was just kind of connecting that with this. So kind of it connected, so I was very happy. So I decided, why not speak it? So from the knowledge point of view, Hanumanji advises Sugriv that a leader is one who should have complete knowledge of what all is going on in his kingdom. From knowledge aspect, a leader should have complete knowledge of all the things. He should completely be in knowledge of all the things, worldly wisdom as well as scriptural wisdom. Then from the skill point of view, Hanumanji advises Sugriv in this aspect that a leader should have a quality of reading the face of a person, seeing his gestures, his intentions, seeing his gestures, his behaviors, his body language, and from that he should infer what is his intention, why he's actually come here, what is going on behind the motions that he is performing. So this, I related it to skill. And then values, Hanumanji said, what is the value of all these things you practice unless and until a leader is having decisive intelligence? If a leader doesn't have decisive intelligence, although he may have knowledge, although he may have the skill, but he may not be able to, put it into practice. So when Sugriv, just by the way Hanumanji spoke to Sugriv, opened and his ears were receptive to this advice. So sensitively Hanumanji handled, because although he was more qualified in all aspects than Sugriv, but because Suryadev, who was the Gurudev of Hanuman, he had kind in Guru Dakshina, he had asked Hanumanji that you go and assist Sugriv, who is my son, because he's being tormented by Vali. So Hanumanji demonstrates this principle of humility, that even though he was kind of more qualified than Sugriv, but he very aptly decides to lead his life and assist Sugriv in his mission. So here, with the guidance that Hanumanji, the instructions that Hanumanji gives, then he further says that I will go and now I will check out, what is happening with these. I will meet these two people. So then there is a beautiful pastime which takes place. I cannot go too much into detail, but the Ramayana very elaborately points out, this is very beautiful, how Hanumanji is the epitome of speech, the perfection of speech, public speaking, the art of, poetic speaking. Whatever you can think of, any words, the choicest of words which comes to mind in comparison with sweet, everything emanates from Hanuman. So the conversation that Ram and Hanuman have, that exemplifies. And then when Hanuman carries Ram and Sugriv on his shoulders Ram and Lakshman on his shoulders to Sugriv, and then he keeps them down, and then he just goes to Sugriv to kind of pass on this message. That time Ram takes that time and he tells Sugriv, he tells Lakshman, did you notice the way in which he spoke to us? That clearly shows what kind of a personality is he. Ram says, without a controlled mind, one cannot stop misusing words. Hanuman was complete in speech. He says, he was gentle, pleasing, and there was gravity in his speech. This Lord Ram says in the Ramayana to Lakshman about Hanuman. And then further he says, this exemplifies that he has learnt very nicely the Vedas and the scriptures under the training of a able guru or teacher, and he has controlled his senses. That is exemplified by the term he says, without a controlled mind one cannot speak like this. So here it is aptly demonstrated in this example how by restraining one's senses and taking shelter under a bona fide spiritual master, you can actually realize the supreme truth of Lord Ram, how Hanumanji basically became dear to Lord Ram. That is further explained in the Ramayana. So the second quality we see is non-attachment to sporting proclivities. So non-attachment to sporting proclivities itself was an eye-opener for me. And in all humility, I would like to say that the Bhagavatam really tore me apart in this aspect. So when I read this aspect, I was like completely broken to shreds and pieces and bits. But then, I was happy that knowledge is seeking and entering in. So, this aspect we can analyze from the part that a sadhaka should not be happy, too much happy in any situation and too much morose in any situation. So what happens when generally we follow sports and sporting activities? We tend to identify ultimately with the sport on a bodily level, either on a building level, a city level, a state level, a district level. It goes further beyond national and then international level and a club level. So basically, ultimately you are bound on the bodily level. So when this attachment becomes deep rooted, it becomes very difficult to give up, such that there is loss of intelligence. And then from a mundane point of view, I was thinking, what happens if one follows, this is with experience, one follows basically hours and hours together, you follow a particular sport from the morning to the evening, and then your particular team you are following, it kind of loses in the climax of the event. What happens? What feeling do we undergo? Those moments of happiness and anxiety and thrill and climax, and what happens? Ultimately, we become totally disinterested. Smashan Vairagya enters for that moment. And then, you realize that too much happiness, Gita, Krishna says, you become equipoised, sthitadhir munir uchyate. That is what one has to practice in life. So, this is what we need to learn when Narad Muni says, non-attachment to sporting proclivities. I was also thinking of something like when there is commercialization, when the commercial aspect enters any activity, what generally happens is there is competition. So when there is competition, then there is a reduction in cooperation. So when there is reduction in cooperation, then there is corruption which seeks in or which might enter into the system. And when there is corruption, ultimately it leads to loss of character. So all the C's get connected. So basically, we should learn and be kind of derive this example from Narad Muni's life, that enter into the water but don't be attached to the water, or don't dirty your trousers. So Prabhupada demonstrated, like Prabhupada was in a flight and a movie was going on, and Prabhupada, the servant was totally in dilemma about what Prabhupada is doing. He was actually looking at the movie, and throughout the flight he completely focused his attention on the movie and went through the entire show. And when the flight landed, as if nothing had happened, Prabhupada just walked down. And so when he was in the flight, when it was there, Prabhupada just had a look at it, and then when he came out, that's it. So when you are not attached, when you don't get attached, you are into it, but then you are not off it. So basically, that kind of attitude is very difficult for us to develop, so better we be careful. So the third thing which Narad Muni speaks is Anuvartini. So there are three stories in the Mahabharata which demonstrate these principles of Anuvartini. In the first section itself, these stories come. So there are three disciples of a guru. So the first disciple, he is named Aruni. So Aruni is instructed by the guru. The guru had a farm and irrigation and everything was going on in his ashram. So you have generally these small canals, you have these small walls built through which water generally flows, and those walls kind of help to divert the flow of water so that all the crops are irrigated. So the guru instructed Aruni, his first disciple, since there is some problem with one of the walls, why don't you go and see to it that the water goes to the crops. So that disciple immediately says, yes Gurudev, I'll do it. He goes forward and he sees that it's not physically possible for him to rectify the situation. But then he remembers the instruction of his guru. Guru's instruction was, water should go to the crops. He couldn't rectify, he was not a mason, he couldn't fix it overnight, but the job had to be done. So what to do? He became the wall. He laid down where there was kind of a breakage. So what happened? Water started getting obstructed there, and it naturally then it got the flow and the entire land was irrigated. So evening, the disciple has not come back. Guru is worried. Why is disciple not come back still? Guru goes out in search of the disciple, saying, "Aruni, my dear disciple, where are you?" So hearing his voice, Aruni says, "Gurudev, I am here. I am lying down in this canal where the water has to pass in." Then he gets up and he says, "Gurudev, it was your instruction I was trying to obey." So Guru sees how he had actually made the task, and the result was achieved that day. He becomes very pleased with the disciple. He blesses the disciple that may knowledge of all the Vedic scriptures enter your mind and you sustain it. The next disciple, disciple number 2. This is Upamanyu. So Upamanyu receives instruction from his guru that there are cows in the ashram. Why don't you take care and protect these cows and take them for herding daily? So Upamanyu says, "Yes, Gurudev, I'll do that." So, yes, from the next day, Upamanyu takes all the cows and starts going to the forest. He comes back in the evening. This activity continues for 3-4 days. At the end of the third day, the guru notices that my disciple, although he's been put to so much of hard work, but still, from his bodily features, he's not looking emaciated or hungry or tired. So the guru asks Upamanyu, "My dear disciple, what is it? I have been giving you this physical heart service. So what is it which is keeping you so healthy? Your body is completely fit and you look so fresh." So he says, "Gurudev, when I go, I beg for bhiksha and I fill my stomach while the cows are herding." So Guru says, "I never asked you to beg for bhiksha. From tomorrow, whatever bhiksha you get, you come and hand it over to me." So he says, "Yes, Gurudev." So then from next day, he gives the bhiksha. Guru doesn't give it back to him for his sustenance or anything for his survival. This continues for 2-3 days. Guru again notices no change in his external demeanor. Body remains the same. Guru asks, "Upamanyu, my dear disciple, again I am seeing that you are fat and bulky. What is it which basically you are intaking now? I am not giving you what you collected either for your sustenance." Upamanyu says, "Gurudev, I collect the first part and I give it to you, then I again go and beg for myself." So Guru says, "No, you should not be doing this. I never gave you permission. By doing this, you are encroaching upon another bhikshu's bhiksha or his source of sustenance. So I never gave you order for this." He says, "Okay, Gurudev, yes, your instructions will be followed." He goes out next day, and then after 3 days, again the Guru sees no difference in his demeanor. Still he is healthy, hale and hearty. So now Guru says, "Upamanyu, what is it that your external features never seem to diminish? What are you doing now? I told you not to beg and I am not giving you anything for your survival. So how are you maintaining your health?" So now Upamanyu says, "Gurudev, I drink the milk that the cow gives. And now I am maintaining my body like that." He says, "Do not do that either." He says, "Yes, Gurudev." Then again, he goes back after 3 days. Again the same thing happens. And Gurudev says, "What is it that is again keeping you healthy? I am completely flabbergasted. Why are you not reducing in bodily structure?" So Upamanyu says, "Oh Gurudev, I have stopped drinking the milk of the cow too. But now, the calf, when it drinks the milk, there is a lot of foam which is left over by the calf. And now I am intaking that foam and that is giving me source of sustenance for my body." So Guru says, "I didn't give you permission either to have that foam. And by doing this, the calf is actually compassionate. Because it is seeing that you are starving and you are not eating anything, it is drinking less milk and leaving more of foam." So Guru says, "Do not do it either." So Upamanyu says, "Yes, Gurudev, I will not do that either." So now, with no alternative left, Upamanyu again goes to the forest to herd the cows. So this time, Upamanyu is one day, 2 days, third day is completely desperate. Nothing to eat, nothing to drink, and his body is, belly is burning in fire. And in desperation, when we are too hungry, we don't realize what we tend to do. There were trees who had fiery leaves. So Upamanyu goes and bites one of those leaves. So when he has a bite at those leaves, completely his digestive system collapses and starts burning within. And because a result of that, he loses his eyes. But still, he is so hungry, he starts moving, continues moving in search of food. Ultimately, he falls in a well. So, after 3 days, Upamanyu doesn't return. Guru is worried. Guru goes out in search. Oh, Upamanyu, my dear disciple, where are you? Please come back. I am eager to see you. So, Upamanyu shouts from the well. Oh, Gurudev, I am here. I have lost my eyes. You said don't eat now, but I somehow chewed the leaves and I landed in this state. So, Guru says, oh, my dear son, why did you chew the leaves? Now, in this circumstance, only Ashwini Kumaras can save you. Pray to the Ashwini Kumaras. So, Upamanyu, he offers and glorifies the Ashwini Kumaras very nicely. The Ashwini Kumaras appear and they give a sweet to Upamanyu. And they say, my dear son, we are very pleased with your prayers. Have this sweet and get rectified. So now, being burnt 5 times, he has learnt his lesson finally. So Upamanyu says, no, Ashwini Kumaras, without the instruction and permission of my guru, I cannot eat this sweet. So Ashwini Kumaras say, don't worry, your guru also has accepted and honored this sweet. So there is no harm in eating this sweet. Once bitten, twice shy, too many times. Upamanyu says, nothing doing. Before my guru grants me permission, I am not going to have this sweet. This pleases the Ashwini Kumaras and they say, my dear son, you have passed the test. Finally, you have realized the importance of obedience. And they bestow his eyesight, everything comes back to normal and Upamanyu returns to his guru. The third story is about a disciple named Veda. So Veda is a disciple who is self-controlled and kind of serves his guru very nicely. And he gets full blessings of his guru. He graduates into a very honored grahastha. Then he has a disciple named Uttanka. So Uttanka, when the time for his guru dakshina comes, he goes to Veda and says, Gurudev, please accept some guru dakshina from me. I would like to give you some guru dakshina. Guru says, don't worry, I don't want anything. But still he persists. And then in this process, Gurudev says, go to the Guru Mata, ask her what she wants and fulfill her desire. That is my guru dakshina. So he goes to Guru Mata and says, oh Guru Mata, kindly fulfill this desire so that my guru dakshina will be in this form. Get me the kundals of the queen of this province. So that was, a tall order. Sometimes we too realize, in our enthusiasm, we volunteer for services and we realize we land up, in services which we then think of, why did I show the enthusiasm in the first place? So, but he had full faith in Guru's empowerment instructions. Without even thinking once, he proceeded. And then what happens is, Guru empowers and then somehow he reaches, the story goes on. And the essence is that he is successful in bringing the kundals without any obstacles. Very easily, he has to pass through certain obstacles, but everything is cleared because complete faith, self-control in Guru's instructions and blessings of the Guru. So then he is successful in getting the kundals of the Guru. So now from these three stories we infer, in the first story we saw that it was complete faith in the Guru's instructions which kind of gave the intelligence for that particular disciple to execute. And so Guru was pleased by that activity of the disciple and he blessed him. Blessings accrue from obeying the instructions of the spiritual master. So second example, Upamanyu, we see that although he was obedient in the sense that whatever Guru said, he listened to the Guru, but he also used his own intelligence. From time to time, he basically obeyed and disobeyed, till he learned a lesson finally and complete surrender was given. Then, sense made of the term obedience. The third, complete faith in the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master enables one to accomplish Herculean tasks which might seemingly be impossible for a common man. So this is what we learn from the three stories. In the case of Dronacharya and Ekalavya, we see that Ekalavya comes to Dronacharya and he says, "Oh Gurudev, kindly accept me as your disciple." Dronacharya, it's there in the Mahabharata, he says, "I cannot accept you as my disciple." In the beginning, in a youth, I mean when he comes as a young boy, he says, and he advises, "Do not take up this practice of archery and follow it." Mahabharata states it very clearly. But what does Ekalavya do? He still goes further and practices this art, keeping a statue of Dronacharya. So when 1 plus 1 is equal to 3, the further equations are all wrong, answers are all wrong. So whatever the world speaks about Ekalavya and the inferences what Dronacharya asked in Guru Dakshina, but the base of it was he was disobedient to Dronacharya in the first place. So when the basic principle is not followed, you can't argue about the rest. The fourth one is Alpabhashini. Alpabhashini is something where we see that speak only as much as required. Do not open your mouth when you are not warranted. If you have the authority and if you can do something about the problem, open your mouth. Otherwise, remain calm and be silent. So this is aptly demonstrated by Rup Goswami says in the NOI, Vacho Vegam Manasakrodha Vegam Jivva Vegam. So here he actually demonstrates what is the principle of when we should speak, why we should speak, what we should eat, what we should not eat, what is palatable, non-palatable. So Rup Goswami speaks, whatever he gives in the first verse of the NOI is very much relevant to the principle of Alpa Bhashini. Of course, we should know, from this very chapter, one more example we can derive is Sudama's wife. Sudama's wife, she demonstrated the principle of Alpabhashini in a very nice way. We see in the verses which we crossed before some few days back that Sudama's wife didn't instruct what kind of a husband you are. You don't understand, we are suffering in this world. Go get work and ask money. I can't live like this. She never said like that. Nor did she even request, "I want money. I can't live. This life is too tedious for me. Please get some money." She didn't say that too. What she communicated the message in such a way which was palatable to Sudama. She knew her husband's heart and mind, and in that particular way, she kind of put the exact words which Sudama couldn't resist, to such an extent that her last weapon or her last word which we used was, "If nothing works, at least you get the association of your friend Krishna, and which is the source of your, the absolute truth." So this was what Sudama was seeking, and it made absolutely perfect sense to him. So when you speak, when you know what to speak, where to speak, then basically this principle demonstrates Alpabhashini. So here we see in these four ways Narad Muni has demonstrated how a sadhaka should imbibe these qualities, and through which it facilitates our practice of acquiring knowledge in friendship, in serving in cooperation under the tutelage of a bona fide spiritual master. Even we see further in this pastime that what happens, Uchishtalepan Anumodito Dujo. So that verse, Narad Muni signifies, or he says, he concludes that it was because I restrained my senses, because I was obedient, because I was not attached, because I was restrained in my speech. So all those qualities, and also I got the mercy, and because of that I was able to get the mercy with the blessings of the readers, the followers of the Vedantas. And when I got that mercy, through that, spiritual knowledge entered, I could retain, Shastras were making sense, and kind of that blessings that sages gave him, he could now propagate it further. So this is the principle in general we imbibe from this pastime. So as it is said aptly, that milk is all pervading in a cow. To get the milk, one has to have the knowledge where to do it. It's in the udder. You can't access it anywhere else other than the udder. So Guru gives this knowledge to a disciple, and then A vessel is required to access that milk. For the milk to fall down in the vessel, two things are required. There should be a wide mouth and depth in the vessel. So it is, a wide mouth is provided when you follow the principle of humility. Humility is that unseen thread or unspoken thread which is all pervading these four qualities. If you don't practice humility and you practice self-control, the result will be not palatable. If you don't practice humility and you are unattached or you are albhabhashini or you are anuvartini, the result doesn't accrue. So the practice of humility, it's like the string which binds all these qualities together, is all important, and that gives us a wide mouth to this vessel, and the depth is provided by all the other Vaishnava qualities along with these four qualities which are needed to for the milk to fall down. So this is what is my small understanding. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Nithai Gopayamanande.